The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
There's a lot of people running their mouth that don't stay the night, never come through town. And some other people running about that don't take the time to suss you out. Still some of us every night be making toast to you, like isn't it nice that somebody had the presence of mind to speak up for you. Let there be light.
Welcome to the Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies. Thank you, folks, for joining us this week. A fantastic show in store for you this week. We're going to get right to the interview in just a second. It's actually our Mount Rushmore of energy agitators coming up. Tom Shepstone, he's a longtime oil and gas writer for Natural Gas Now, has a new website out, a new brand called Energy Security. You might want to check it out on Substack. Stephen Hines, known as the Word Merchant, he also joins us for our Mount Rushmore of energy agitators, those individuals that are trying to shut down the oil and gas industry. Coming up in just a moment. Plus, Robert Bryce, check him out on Substack or check out his brand new docuseries, Juice the Series. It's about the grid. Folks, you do not want to miss that. That's coming up in just a moment or two. Plus, Clint Kling joins us. Virtual reality training. It's what's taking off now in the mining industry. It's safer and prevents a lot of injuries. My name is Jason Spies. This is the Crude Life Week in Review. We got much, much more planned today, but we're going to get right to our first interview, folks. The Mount Rushmore of energy agitators.
Right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we've got Mr. Tom Shepstone on the line with us. Of course, you can check him out on Substack. And Stephen Hines is with us, too, the Word Merchant. And, gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Today's program is going to be kind of a little bit different, actually. I've never done this in the world of energy or politics. I've only done this in sports or professional wrestling, where you get your Mount Rushmore and you say, who's the top four quarterbacks of all time? Who's the best heavyweight champion of all time? And you put up your Mount Rushmore type thing. We're going to do that today with Tom Shepstone and Stephen Hines with energy enemies, energy agitators, those individuals who are trying to shut down the energy industry. And it could be from a variety of different reasons, angles. You know, who knows? It could be someone as obvious as a Greta Thunberg, or it could be somebody within the industry itself. We're going to give you, looks like, 12 different energy agitators, energy enemies, if you will, today on our different Mount Rushmores. And, of course, that of, you know, this is not anything I'm going to hold any of you to, you know, I'm not going to document this and hold it over your feet, so to speak, Tom. You know what I mean? I mean, this is kind of a little bit fluid here a little bit, but yeah, how you doing? And have you ever done anything like this when it comes to energy agitators?
Not really, but I have on my blog over the years a couple of times identified what I call plutocrats and poverty keepers, who are, you know, are, you might say, the enemies of energy, but very specific forms of energy. They're not against the solar. They're not against wind. They're not against geothermal. They're only against oil and gas, coal, and occasionally nuclear.
Well, Stephen Hines, have you ever done anything like this where you've had to group together those that you think are kind of causing some issue with the energy industry?
Well, yes, Jason. Over the last 4 or 5 months, I've aggregated a list of photographs and people that I consider to be, let's say, against some kind of global economic development and abundance for energy for everybody. They're very localized, small-minded sort of attacks on gas and oil, like Tom said. But the truth is, they don't really, their scope isn't large. And so in some ways, they're very easy to point out.
Well, let's just start with an easy one that I'll be up front. It's on my list. I would put her on the Mount Rushmore of energy agitators or energy enemies. And Tom, we'll start with you. I'm not sure if Greta Thunberg is on your list or not, but she's on mine.
Not really on mine. To me, you got to follow the money. It's always, always, always the money. And if you look at the money, there are two names that immediately come to mind. And I'll just give you one of them to start with. One is Nathaniel Simons. Nathaniel Simons is the son of Jim Simons. Jim Simons is a world-class famous mathematician who made a fortune on Wall Street because of his mathematical skills. And his son, Nathaniel, is, of course, a trust funder type, but also has apparently inherited some of his father's acumen and has done some of the same things. But, of course, he started with money. So, and he has a wife whose name I can't recall at the moment. But Nathaniel Simons, he and his wife, from 2008 through 2018, which is the latest figures that you'll find on the Institute for Energy Research site, they have what they call a big green list. They don't maintain it up to date as much as I'd like, but it's a really excellent resource. And if you look at those for that decade, the Nathaniel Simons and his wife spent, $423 million. Maybe it was 73. Anyway, it was close to $500 million. $500 million on various donations, all tax exempt donations to all sorts of, you know, radical groups that, of course, attack energy and are kind of the first line of the energy enemy offense. But it's really, you know, the ideologues are not the real obstacle. You know, nobody takes Greta Thunberg seriously. But what she is and so many others are representatives of the people with big money. And Nathaniel Simons is one of those. And of course, he lives a life that's completely counter to everything his groups impose or want to impose on everybody else. He has a magnificent mansion in Hawaii on the beach. And he has a magnificent mansion in, I think it's either San Francisco or Oakland. And he's living the high life, you know. So Nathaniel Simons would be the top on my list, but there's another one I'll get to, and because I think we're going to go round and round here. I'll be ready with another one. But Nathaniel,
all right,
is up
Stephen
there.
Hines, have you ever? Tom, I have not heard of Nathaniel Simon. I had no idea who he was, and this is why you're on the program, is to talk about these types of individuals. This is fantastic. Stephen Hines, have you ever heard of this Nathaniel Simon?
You know, I haven't, which is sort of a credit to him hiding behind what they call dark money and being behind that the average reader, somebody who isn't as close to it as Tom Sierpton, knows nothing about him.
That's correct. Yeah.
You know, and one of the reasons because I'm pretty sure I know who Stephen Hines is going to name here in just a second as his number one.
To check out the full-length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
In a world of ever-changing energy, staying ahead is crucial. We are introducing Oil Man Magazine, your trusted source for leaders in American energy. At Oil Man Magazine, they deliver more than just everyday industry news. They provide a comprehensive overview of the oil and gas market, revealing the trends, technologies, and software applications shaping the future. Visit oilmanmagazine.com and empower yourself with the knowledge that drives change. Together, let's shape the future of the oil and gas industry. Oil Man Magazine and their companion magazines, Oil Woman Magazine and Energies Magazine, leading the way for the leaders in American energy. Oil Man Magazine, your compass in a rapidly evolving world.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
He's a speaker. He's a writer. He's an author. He's a podcaster. He's an all-around good guy. How are you doing today, Mr. Robert Bryce?
Hi. Great. I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Now, be careful on that expert line. My dad said an expert's anybody from out of town. So I just generally call myself.
By the way, we're also being joined by Stephen Hines, who also is a energy expert. And the way I use expert is the same way I use genius. You just have to know 1% more than the person sitting next to you. That's it.
Genius.
And in today's day and age, it doesn't take much to be a genius.
Yes, well, right. Fair enough.
All right. So let's get right to the meat and potatoes of the interview, the juice of the interview. Of course, juice is it. The website, of course, robertbryce.substack.com. But we have a new docu-series that we want to talk about that involves the grid. It's called Juice. And what's the name of the website?
So, yes, it's a five-part docuseries about the electric grid. It's called Juice, Power, Politics, and the Grid, and it's available for free. I said free, yes, free, F-R-E-E, free, juicetheseries.com, juicetheseries.com. We have a lot of content there. All the episodes are available on YouTube, but the easiest way to find it is juicetheseries.com. Did I mention juicetheseries.com?
Hey, yes, you did. Okay. You had a great cast of characters, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really proud of the project. It took a long time, but my colleague Tyson Culver put it together. He did a great job. But yes, we have over 30 on-camera interviews with people from all over the world, and I think it came out really well. I'm really proud of it.
Well, and you didn't have to narrate it. I think I heard your voice once in the in the whole series. So yeah, you let your guests do the tell the story.
Yeah, we did that as much as we could because we thought the grid is a complicated subject, right? And rather than having a lecture, we thought, well, let's let these people tell the story as much as we possibly can. So we kept the voiceover to an absolute minimum. And I think that made it for a stronger project.
What I liked about it is that, each part kind of represented its own niche part or subcategory of what the grid really represents.
Right.
Stephen, he's watched it a couple times already. He calls me. He's like, have you seen this part of this episode and everything else? So talk to me about episode one. Give the audience an idea. If they're going to go watch episode one, what are they in store for?
Sure. So episode one is we call the Texas meltdown. And we start with the winter storm Uri in 2021 for a number of reasons. One is, it really is the reason why my colleague Tyson Culver and I made this project. And again, due credit to Tyson for all the work he did on it. He directed it and put together all the different elements and did just a fantastic job. But he and I were both blacked out here in Austin in 2021. And after, everything, we got power back on and we started talking and we heard about what had happened at ERCOT and how close ERCOT, the Texas grid, almost came, almost collapsed within 4 or 5 minutes of collapse, which would have been a calamity unlike anything else that has ever hit the state. And so we thought about that. And then we thought, the more we learned, we realized, oh, well, the grid across the country is being fragilized. So episode one, really, it lays it out. What is the grid? Why did this happen in Texas? And we interviewed Meredith Angwin, who I think is just an amazing intellect and self-published her own book, Shorting the Grid. And we lay out the case for what is the grid and why is this happening? And it's about incentives. As Charlie Munger famously said, show me the incentives, I'll show you the outcome. And we're all the incentives are for more weather dependent generation. And that's the wrong way to go.
I tried to find your numbers as far as munis and publicly traded utilities. Can you go through those numbers? They're just staggeringly complex.
Sure. Well, and this is one of the other things that motivated us to do this project is that the electric grid is an incredibly complex thing. And I wrote about it on my Substack, robertbryce.substack.com. And I did the electric grid explained in 10 charts. And it was a pretty successful posting because it is incredibly complex. But here are the numbers, Stephen. So we have over 3,000 different electricity providers in America. The U.S. has the most diffused ownership of its electric grid of any country in the world, and it's not even close. So we have 800, 900 cooperatives. We have around 2,000 publicly owned utilities, like an Austin Energy here in Austin, which city owns it. There are about 180 or so investor-owned utilities. Then you have the federal agencies like Tennessee Valley Authority and Bonneville and Western Area Power Administration. And then in California, you have these community choice aggregators, which are, you know, a whole other bastard subset of the system. But again, it is an incredibly complex system that's then overseen by the RTOs, by state public utility commissions, some by FERC. It's just an insanely complex system, and it's a wonder it all works, but it does. And one of the reasons why we made this film, why we made this docuseries, is we wanted people and policymakers to understand how important it is, how it's being undermined, and why we ignore this fragility at our extreme peril.
To check out the full-length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Look, here's what I'll say about this, Steve, is there's a reason that the state is so focused on this. There's a reason that the people that are involved in politics are very focused on this, because it's a money grab. It's a gold rush. It's a .com. It does have a bubble burst, but there are going to be people making money. Now, we haven't talked about the carbon conference on the air. Okay. So I'm involved with a carbon conference that is going to be the week of the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. We partnered with an energy exposition. And Steve, the emails that we send out, they have a 38% open rate. That's incredible. Okay. So the activity that's coming from this carbon market, there's a reason that all of a sudden the big dogs are showing up. Do you know what they're doing at the Republican headquarters today, Steve?
No, I don't.
Everybody's getting together for their big let's do our kickoff. So there's an organization. Do you think it coincides with their little hoot nanny tonight, where all the big dogs are in town? So you have all the big dogs in town for the Summit Carbon thing tomorrow. So they're going to be doing their Republican, hey, let's do our kickoff for the election deal at noon today or 1 o'clock today. And then they have their little hootenanny tonight that they apparently have millions of dollars extra. This is what I don't understand. I don't understand how all of a sudden this company has millions of dollars to give Kathy Nesset and Scott Hennen so they can go and put on a hootenanny and try to tell people that Summit's good. The fact that Scott Hennen and Kathy Nesset are involved, people aren't going to listen. They don't have any credibility in the state. That's right. Scott Hennen and Kathy Nesset have zero credibility in the state. You, Steve, on to you.
So why do you think that is? I know Kathy Nesset is the godmother of the Bakken. She's been professional.
Because she's followed the subsidies, and she's not from here. She's from New Jersey, so she's not a friend of ag. She's not. She might have sat on the board of Federal Reserve, and she might know a lot about oil and gas, but she's not a friend of ag, and so don't act like it, and don't tie yourself to Scott Hennen either. That doesn't help your cause.
Well,
at least not getting, you know, credibility.
Scott Hennen, from a marketing perspective and from a media perspective, has been nothing but a subsidy his entire career. If there's not free,
Steve, I'm talking professionally. Listen, I like Scott. I have no problem with Scott. Scott has done a very good job of trying to survive in a very competitive marketplace. But look what he's done. He's What happened to the flag? What happened to the show on the statewide network? What happened to all these? It just crumbles and crumbles. And he's been given more opportunity than anybody.
It's a credibility issue.
Good for him for. That's what I'm saying. So, and good for him for being like Mr. Wonderful and being able to tap dance and keep getting the same people to give you money. But his message, his presentation doesn't work. And that's what's happened to Kathy Nesset. People no longer.
Jason, when you sell out and just take the check, and it's about just taking the money instead of, you know what, having principles and going, no, I'm not taking the check because that's wrong.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
In a world of ever-changing energy, staying ahead is crucial. We are introducing Oil Man Magazine, your trusted source for leaders in American energy. At Oil Man Magazine, they deliver more than just everyday industry news. They provide a comprehensive overview of the oil and gas market, revealing the trends, technologies, and software applications shaping the future. The Oil Man Magazine honors the proud history of the oil and gas industry by reporting on the cutting-edge developments that drive progress. The Oil Man's user-friendly website is packed with helpful information and great features, ensuring you're always up to date. But time is of the essence. The severity of the oil and gas industry demands immediate attention. Now is the time to act. Visit oilmanmagazine.com and empower yourself with the knowledge that drives change. Together, let's shape the future of the oil and gas industry. Oil Man Magazine and their companion magazines, Oil Woman Magazine and Energies Magazine, leading the way for the leaders in American energy. Oil Man Magazine, your compass in a rapidly evolving world.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Let's head over to the Zoom line where Clint King from Shepherd is waiting patiently as we get started on the interview here. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing well.
So for those people wondering out there, what is an NPC? It's a non-player control. What is the NPC? What does that stand for again? It's in video games.
It's like a...
non-player controller or something like that.
So it's like it just kind of has its script in it. That's all it does.
Right. So basically the way that it was explained to me was that, okay, so when you go into a shop, you know, a store, it's always the same person. So no matter what time of day it is, no matter what day it is, it's always the same person. And that person represents us because It is. There's certain things that are said and they call them triggers. Well, it's not so much a trigger. It's a scripter. It triggers a script. And so much of our minds now are segmented like that, man, when they talked about that NPC, I'm like, wow, that is society right now. So what you're talking about is pulling people away from that, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I have one non-player character in my VR thing, and he kind of gets triggered, right, when you go past a certain point, or you know, like he comes, he's doing one thing, and then he does another thing. Like, he's just scripted to do his thing, right? But certainly, like, a lot of people are days are about predecessing the last, like, 80% of like what they know from the day before or whatever, you know, like, so there's a lot of programming done in people, and being able to like focus on the behaviors that are causing safety. And that's one other thing that, you know, I was trying to target too in this VR stuff is like, I put it in there and program it in there too, like the way I think you should go through training. Right. And so now you're in there and you're in this whole new environment. That's what's great about VR is like you can create this environment, this learning environment for these people. So then they can start undoing some of the bad behaviors because they're tasked with certain like good behaviors. And so we're trying to retrain the eyes, essentially retrain the brain to have them start thinking for themselves. A lot of critical thinking skills, I think, have been absent for a long time in our school systems. You know, and that's one thing, you know, we can do to help, you know, people just, you know safety and be safer just by developing these crucial skills, you know, asking questions, essentially. Is this safe? Am I safe? Like before you even enter a situation.
You know, another thing to point out too, is with the scripted behavior that a lot of us fall into. I'm not sure if you remember when this happened, if you were out in the Bakken, but there was three Dickinson State University girls, young girls. I think they were 19. Mm-hmm. They were out looking at stars and they drove over into a stock pond and drowned.
Yeah, car, I remember car. That. Yep.
Oh, you remember that? Okay, so
yeah, I was out on a rig at that time.
Yeah, as tragic crazy. As that was, one of the takeaways I took from that was two of the girls called 911 and another one called their parents. Or it might have been two called their parents and one called 911. And I just remember going, that was what they did in an emergency. They went to their phone. One called for emergency services and the other one's called to the parents. This is unusual to me because, you know, you would think that most people would fight or flight, try to get out, not be programmed to go rely on someone else. That opened my eyes quite a bit to how we do need to train people properly, especially when it comes to oil and gas.
To check out the full-length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we've got Mr. Joe Sinnott on the line with us. He's an executive coach. He's an industry expert. Strive for mediocrity. Wow, that's quite the lesson in life. But I've had similar pieces of advice from managers. I could really call that a mentor. My personal mentor in media, really, when I look back, the ones that really became the best mentors to me, and I have two in particular, it came down to the judgment, really. Their lessons were always rooted with don't judge, accept people for who they are. And so in the media, which is really where my career has been since I was 10 years old, that's been very valuable to me because I believe in free speech. And when you believe in free speech, you know, you really don't judge people because you give them the freedom to speak. And you, when you give people the freedom to speak, you begin to understand them a little bit if you listen. And, you know, the nice Dave Chappelle joke is that, you know, when you run out of things to say and you can't figure out how to operate, you go to the Second Amendment. That's the right to bear arms. When the First Amendment doesn't work, you go to the Second Amendment, right? So, and then the world of energy, I thought the same thing. Like, you know, at the end of the day, Republicans and Democrats need energy. It's not so much they even use it, it's they need it. And this independence over there, they need it too. And that really fringy guy out there that thinks the earth is flat, well, he needs energy too, because apparently he's productive during the day somehow outside of telling people the earth is flat. That's my favorite conspiracy, that the earth is flat. I mean, I that's like a train wreck to me at times when it pops up on my social media there, Joe, just a little sidebar on that. But anyway, so getting back to the non-judgment part, that really, when I look at the world of energy and I look at the world of media, the first rule is non-judgment. And then the second one is, you know, rules, because in the world of energy, you got a lot of rules in order to live. Be safe. And in the world of media, you have a lot of rules in order to keep mental health and people's information safe, because the media is supposed to be the eyes and the ears for the busy, busy public. And much like an egg, the farmers are out there to feed the world and the energy producers are out there to power the world. So, again, we're getting kind of lengthy by Jason Spiezer this morning, but I felt like a little context is needed with these. Do you have an overall theme of mediocrity when it comes to your mentorship? I mean, outside of the, you know, media, you know, strive for mediocrity, was there any other, you know, central themes that you can think of that really stand out to you?
Well, I guess, I mean, in my current role as coach, I think mediocrity is front and center, obviously not in terms of having it as some sort of goal, but in terms of recognizing when a leader is mediocre, typically, you know, and unaware of his or her mediocrity, you know, unaware that, you know, even people who have achieved, you know, tremendous success, you know, at the end of the day, it's almost despite the fact that, you know, they're really not differentiated. You know, they're not doing things that much different from anyone else. And in many cases, that opens them up to some vulnerabilities because it's not sustainable, right? In this day and age, you know, we got, what, 8 billion people on the planet. And the moment when somebody looks at you and says, you know what, this person really isn't that different. It's almost like they're just reading off of a script. And the moment that somebody realizes that and they kind of peg you as being mediocre, they're going to start looking elsewhere, or they're at least not going to be listening to you with the same level of intent as they would have otherwise, or the same level of respect if they actually thought, man, this person's different. This person's worth listening to, instead of just, yeah, picking up some leadership book or listening to some podcast or YouTube video where you can get the same darn talking points and approach. So I guess on that hand, Jason, yes, I'm always on guard against leaders who are unwittingly mediocre. On the flip side, in terms of what does sort of guide my view of things and certainly my coaching and things that should be, you know, worthy of striving for, I think it ties into what you were just saying there in terms of, yes, you know, not judging as a basis of things. And I would shift that as, you know, really trying to understand where the other person is coming from. And again, I think those, you were kind of saying the same thing there.
To check out the full length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spiess, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
In a world of ever-changing energy, staying ahead is crucial. We are introducing Oil Man Magazine, your trusted source for leaders in American energy. At Oil Man Magazine, they deliver more than just everyday industry news. They provide a comprehensive overview of the oil and gas market, revealing the trends, technologies, and software applications shaping the future. Discover what's happening with oil in America and around the world. The Oil Man Magazine's website is your gateway to the latest news, insights, and breakthroughs in the industry. Everything you need to know about the oil industry is right here in one convenient place. The Oil Man's user-friendly website is packed with helpful information and great features, ensuring you're always up to date. But time is of the essence. The severity of the oil and gas industry demands immediate attention. Now is the time to act. Visit oilmanmagazine.com and empower yourself with the knowledge that drives change. Together, let's shape the future of the oil and gas industry. Oil Man Magazine and their companion magazines, Oil Woman Magazine and Energies Magazine, leading the way for the leaders in American energy. Oil Man Magazine, your compass in a rapidly evolving world.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Down in the Delta, where there is shelter, no helter-skelter, no blues around. I'm on my way now, most any day now, I'm Delta bound.
Thanks to the funders of Peril and Promise for supporting PBS. Over the last few years, it feels like young people have taken over the climate movement. They're out striking, suing national governments, occupying congressional offices, and taking to the streets. And according to polls, they care more, with 70% of young adults saying they worry about global warming compared with just 56% of people over 55. But of course, climate action isn't new. People have been marching, protesting, and demanding change since the 60s and 70s. People who are grandparents now were fighting for the climate when they were young people, and many of the same people are still at it today. It made us wonder, what has changed since the early days of the environmental movement? How are the stakes different today? And what advice do different generations have when it comes to speaking up about climate change? To answer these questions, we talk to climate activists old and young.
My name is Jamie Margolin. I'm an 18-year-old climate justice organizer, co-founder of the International Youth Climate Justice Movement Zero Hour, and just a girl who is trying to solve the climate crisis the best I can, even though it's not something that one person can do.
I'm Jerry Friedman. So I am a national co-chair of an organization called Elders Climate Action, committed to mobilizing elders to raise their voice and take action on climate change.
Like today's youth, some older climate activists grew up in a time full of social change and activism.
I'm 69 years old. We all kind of grew up in the 60s and 70s in the civil rights movement. We're not strangers to activism. There was civil rights movement, Vietnam, the women's movement, the early startings of the environmental movement. I, in fact, was co-chair of my Earth Day committee, my university.
Of course, these moments aren't the origin of environmental activism in the United States. For example, indigenous people have been continuously fighting for their land and clean air and clean water since colonists first arrived. But nationally, in the 60s and 70s, the modern environmental movement started taking off in a new way. What happened? Well, in 1962, Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring, revealing to the world the serious environmental and health concerns of pesticides. And after decades of cities choked with smog and pollution, the Clean Air Act became law in 1963. Then, in April of 1970, 20 million people across the U.S. took to the streets for the first Earth Day. And just months later, the Environmental Protection Agency was born. The modern environmental movement had arrived with a splash.
And then people went in very different directions for the next 20, 30, 40 years.
And unfortunately, those early efforts weren't enough. While there aren't as many rivers catching on fire nowadays as there were back then, thousands of people across the U.S. still don't have clean drinking water, for instance. And many are still forced to live next to polluting power plants. And climate change, of course, is still happening, and on a far worse scale than it was half a century ago, which has brought older environmental activists back into the fold to work alongside and for younger people.
I, you know, look at my grandchildren's eyes, and I know that I have to take action. We have very little time, and we'll do whatever I can in my time to resolve and push for policies that are really going to make this planet habitable.
But older activists aren't just worried about the planet they're leaving for their grandchildren. The worst effects of climate change, like worsening droughts, heat waves, and storms, are also a direct threat to older people right now. But for young people like Jamie, this has been the reality for their whole lives, an abnormal normal.
It's kind of just been something that's always there, that's always been looming. Like, I guess the moment when I really was pushed toward action was more around the 2016 election, with the election of Donald Trump. The people who were being put in power were the people who were actively causing this problem and actively making it worse. And so I realized, like, oh, we can't even trust our leaders to take action on this. And so that was really what pushed me to become a climate justice organizer, as opposed to just a girl who was worried about climate change.
Regardless of if you're new to caring about the climate or if you've been at this for decades, one of the most important aspects of climate action is getting others on board, because solving global scale problems obviously takes massive cooperation. So how do the generations approach action on a massive scale?
You know, we're a huge, huge voting block, a huge percentage of the population. And so we can have impact both, you know, in ways that we vote and in ways that we spend our money, and allowing and letting elders know that they have a voice. I think the younger generations have a greater capacity for immediate kinds of communication that we are not as successful with because of that generational gap. We are happy to have the youth be up front and out there, because they are the ones that now, you know, it is about them.
Watching the news and reading social media the past few years, young climate activists have made a huge mark. Generation Z has gotten so much attention, it kind of seems like they're doing something new or special. But what do they think?
I mean, people always ask me that question, what is unique about this generation's approach to the climate crisis? And it's always an interesting question because every generation has had their young environmental heroes. I mean, thinking about the indigenous people who have been on the front lines fighting the climate crisis for so long, I really don't like how the question is framed often between like, oh, the young people are good and the old people are bad. But in the reality, it's not about old versus young. It's about people and the forces who are destroying our planet and life on Earth, and people and the forces who are fighting for it. And I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm doing so much better than older generations, like to the face of an indigenous elder in the Amazon who has been fighting to protect the Amazon for their whole lives. I respect the work that came before me, and I think it's important that we honor the work that came before us.
And it isn't like young people and older folks are existing in these two entirely different universes. The water protectors at Standing Rock, for example, are a multi-generational coalition of tribes from across North America. As different as these generations seem, they have a lot in common. And one place where most people who talk about climate change agree is that there isn't one way to talk about climate.
You have to frame the conversation differently for each group or person that you're talking to. I'm not going to talk to a politician the same way I talk to a group of elementary schoolers. When I'm talking to a politician from a different state, you know, what are the issues in their state that I should relate with? To what do their voters care about that I should relate this to? The climate crisis is so broad and wide and affects so many people in so many different ways that you have to find a way to cater the conversation towards that person.
We really can't change the minds of climate deniers. It's, you know, they're not prepared to listen to the science. So why should we focus that energy on the climate deniers, but rather those people who either really don't have a major opinion or are in the middle of the road, or have been sitting back and kind of knowing that this is happening, but not really knowing how they can act?
If you want to talk about climate, you might feel like you have to know everything or be perfect, and that's a lot of pressure. But really, all you have to do is care.
That a lot of people don't like being around people who are known as environmentalists because then they think that, oh, this is going to be a guilt trip. Honestly, I just used a plastic straw to have boba. Like, I was having boba. Like, here it is. Me having this is not single-handedly destroying the world. Wow, you're such a hypocrite. You're an environmentalist and you had boba with plastic straw. Like, yes, I did. And why are you mad at me? Get mad at the fossil fuel industry who are literally lying to everyone, knowing they were causing this issue, oppressing communities, poisoning people, killing people, causing this mass destruction. They're trying to get us to blow out our little matches while they're taking a blowtorch to everything.
You know, sometimes people say, well, you know, the youth are the leaders of tomorrow. I don't believe that. The youth are the leaders of today. And so for them to be upfront and us to support that is fine, and it's critical that we do that. Lend our skills where we have them.
Also puts an incredibly awful amount of pressure, like the young people will save us. The young people are unique and special, and they're going to solve the climate crisis, when it's like, I'm tired, I'm trying to adjust to classes, I'm here I'm trying to live my life. I mean, it's really hard to...
And that's going
to
do it this week for the Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and we'll be back next week at this time on this radio station with the Crude Life Week in Review. From the staff here at the Crude Life Week in Review, my name is Jason Spies, asking each and every one of you to remember, all energy has a purpose, and we are all energy. Make it a fantastic week.
They keep telling me it's only a phase, and then soon enough I'll see that I'm crazy for loving you the way that I do, because who could love somebody like you? They say you're too damn small, and I won't pretend it don't matter at all. But no matter what the trouble ahead, still won't regret this time that I spent. Sad to behold, nothing you could do would make me go. We'll let the world judge what they don't know, giving me a heartbeat.